We work a lot on the ecological side of it, but there's many other reasons as well. But we decided that there's a lot of nihilism online associated with it as well, and fatalism. And acknowledging kind of the raw facts, the brutal facts about the world we live in and our prospects, how can we find ways to be optimistic about our future? How can we take practical action? So that's what kind of Doomer Optimism as a podcast and a network, a series of events, things of that nature was kind of founded on. So that's me. Ashley, do you want to go?
Sure. Yeah, I would echo that. I would say Jason and I both have like a very similar academic background. Basically PhDs interested in food and agricultural systems. So, and both of us connected over the fact that we had homesteads, little homesteads for our families. Since Doomer Optimism started, I have moved back to Chicago from Uruguay in South America. So there's a little bit of a actually a question, an inflection point, because one of the optimistic points of Doomer Optimism was kind of landedness and homesteading and maybe moving out of cities and into rural areas. But then since it started, I would say we've had a lot of urbanists on, new urbanists, people interested in talking about how to make the suburbs work, how to make cities work. So, it's not like it's impossible to do Doomer Optimism in a city or anything, but it did start kind of around homesteading, and Jason has just recently declared that the online homesteading movement is dead. And so we can talk about that. So that's that. And I'm kind of finding my points of optimism in Chicago. And we're just kind of evolving as the world does. But I would also say Doomer Optimism specifically did kind of jump out during the pandemic when a lot of people were feeling pretty insecure, pretty shaken up by that experience. And then, and also a lot of people were isolated. So it was a great opportunity to meet other people while you're stuck in your house. And since then it's kind of blossomed into more in-person events, relationships, just friendships. We had a Doomer Optimism camps last summer, not last summer, the summer before, where people kind of like went and did some barn raising type activities, fence post, like, I don't know what you building fences, and that kind of stuff. So we're interested in more and more of those kind of in real life experiences, I think, as like we're moving out of the pandemic. We also have Nate and Josh Kearns here. These are two of our regular hosts on the podcast, and so I'll let them introduce themselves. You want to go, Nate?
Sure. I'm noticing in the comments somebody's Ryan, I guess, is commenting on fellow Chicago, and I'm also from Illinois, not Chicago, or I have been in Illinois here for 12 years. So, yeah, I've been in Illinois for 12 years. I've been on a farm, that whole time, and that's and sort of kind of I fell into this sort of Doomer optimism world. I started using Twitter more like in 2020 and met these wonderful people. And at the time, the sort of sensibility really matched my own, which was sort of like doomer, but pretty bored with being a doomer. And like kind of just like over it as far as like kind of like, well, fuck it. If we're fucked, then like dead song, maybe going to hell in a bucket, but I kind of want to enjoy the ride. So I'm not going to worry about it anymore. And gonna behave as though we're not doomed. And so by behaving as though we're not doomed, I feel way less doomerish than I used to. By kind of doing optimistic things like growing our cattle herd and just raising a family and just sort of living. Landedness is a big, big theme for me my whole life, but especially in regards to starting and learning to farm and grow this farm. But in the act of doing that and kind of behaving in a way in which you're trying to live and be alive and celebrate living. It just sort of makes I mean, if I think about it too much, and like, it's not like I'm like, oh, because I behave in this more optimistic way, I suddenly don't think we're screwed. I mean, I kind of, those things are still there. And in a lot of ways, there are things that are really problematic, but I feel hopeful that, a lot of the things that are bound to break maybe need to break, and, that we'll figure it out. There's a lot of things that maybe wouldn't be so bad if they broke down, and we'll figure it out. We're capable. So that's sort of my, how I kind of weave into this philosophically, and I guess with the orientation towards doing and not not getting so. Another piece I think is integral to doomer optimism, from my point of view, is just not allowing yourself to get riled up with the thing that everybody's upset about for these 5 minutes. Kind of have fun with it, but not being so, to use a Gen X term, I guess, politically correct about everything, and to not, not practice correct thinking, and correct speaking all the time. That's something, I come from I'm a more liberal person. I've always been a left person, and I've just found that like a straitjacket the last few years, and the way you're supposed to talk and think a certain way. And so I've felt pretty welcome and excited and enjoyed, being a part of a community that's sort of not hung up on being on using the right words for everything. So that's, in short,
That's
I'm a
good.
therapist too,
Yeah.
and by
Oh, sorry, go
trade.
ahead.
No, by trade, I'm a psychotherapist too, which is a pretty interesting job to get to know people from the inside.
Yeah, therapist, farmer, dad. Josh, you want to go?
My background's in environmental engineering and environmental chemistry, and one of my big focus areas is on appropriate technologies, particularly in water and sanitation and water treatment, do-it-yourself, decentralized water treatment, that sort of thing. Also interested in regenerative agriculture and rotational grazing, and trying to learn in a hands-on way, learn by doing. And I found the podcast a while ago, and then quickly discovered that Jason and I are only about an hour apart. We're in the same kind of area. So we've been able to meet up several times and work at each other's places and develop a bit of a friendship and stuff. So yeah, it's been fun being a part of the online discussions and stuff, and then also getting a chance to connect with a few people in real life. So
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, we can talk more kind of panel-like, but I also want to bring others in as well. Whoever, I mean, I don't want to force anybody to introduce themselves if they don't want to, but anybody, if we go around, does anybody want to introduce themselves, what they're into, why they're here, maybe from what you've heard so far, ways that in which you do or don't resonate with doomer optimism?
yeah, I could share. My sense is that doomerism is a state of mind, and that kind of like a Christian that believes they're going to go to heaven when they die also doesn't believe that anymore. It's really depressing. But for somebody that's believed that their entire life, it's not. Or if you're on the Titanic and you're trying to save the ship and you're disappointed you can't save the ship, well, maybe there's somebody that's like, oh yeah, that's not on the table to save the ship. The appropriate course of action is to get as many life rafts into the water. That's what constitutes winning in this scenario. And so I've been trying to recalibrate, okay, what's a realistically positive way to come at the meta crisis? What can be achieved? And then I don't get doomed about it because I'm like, well, you know what? All this plays out eventually anyway. This is one century of hundreds. It's so easy to get so caught up in it as though it's the end all be all, but it's not. No matter how it plays out, civilization will end. Nobody alive now will be alive 100 years from now. So it's like, what am I going to do while I'm here? So serve an edifying role, play a participatory positive role while I'm here that's suited to my interests and skill sets. I found my way in through like Daniel Schmachtenberger and Zach Stein, and actually managed to do a little bit of work for them in the Consilience Project, and got to meet Brendan in Vermont. I was staying at the Maple Monastic Academy for 6 months last year, and so I've just been kind of in and around the space a little bit. I'm very action oriented, but I'm learning lately that what's useful to different people makes up different things. Maybe people would like join a community effort, or just cohere or reflect. And so I like to try to find, you know, my tribe of like, you know, I'm interested in action. I want to throw the kitchen sink at this. I want to come up with some solutions, not because it has to be solved, but because that's just what I enjoy doing. And so I think finding that for yourself is really useful. And then you find your tribe of people that like to do that. And so I don't know, I think it's really a state of mind that even no matter how bad the situation appears, if you find some role to play that's enjoyable and edifying, then you can make the most of any situation, I think. And so that's been what I've been finding for myself. But I love meeting people. I love cohering with others and hearing what other people's interests and skill sets are. And just glad to be a part of the group. A lot of new faces here that I've not met before. So it's good to hear from all of you.
Thanks, Ben. Cecil, you had your hand up right real early. Good.
Awesome. Thank you. And it's Cecile.
Okay,
it's awesome to be here with you all tonight. I didn't know about Doomer Optimism podcast until I saw your post on Limacon. So well met. Yeah, I think the prompt is, how did I come to be here? Like, how do I weave into this idea of we are doomed and there's this amazing life we have. To answer that, I'd just say that I think I've known since I was like in my early 20s, so like 30 plus some years ago, that shit was going to hit the fan, and have had by inclination since I think, you know, I was born with some love of earth and creation and tending, began to grow my own gardens when I was 17. Like, my surrounding family didn't know that. I didn't learn it from them. My grandmother had it, but hopped a generation. I've been into the earth and like building things and like trying to create a society, communities that could be resilient to what is coming for a while. And that journey has been both, you know, tremendously amazing and challenging, and I've learned a lot. And one of the things that really has pulled me forward is this idea that at the heart of what we have to solve for as a species is that we don't share power well. We've come from a long line, a long lineage, millennia of being shown how to dominate each other. And we're not that great at actually cooperating over the long run. And so I've found, similar to what Ben was just saying, that finding something that I can give to this moment that feels important and precious and like worth giving everything I have to has been far more important to me in a way than the fact that, yeah, it's going to be bad. And so, yeah, that's why I'm here. And I'm honored to do the work I do in the world, which is sharing a set of practices that help us do shared power better, more reliably. And it turns out to really enable self-organization to happen as a species. So that wakes me up in the morning and moves me in ways that I know I'm surfing on horror and horror, more horror to come, that there is a way I'm finding my relatedness to that feels meaningful and deeply important to me and to others. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you. Tanner, you want to go?
Hey, my name is Tanner. I live in Panama right now, probably not for too much longer because it's probably not going to be a stable region, in my opinion, even though I am in the mountains. I came to the climate crisis specifically about a year ago. That's the collapse scenario I find the most realistic and by far the most scary, for sure. and definitely left me in a somewhat devastated state for a while. But then I listened to a podcast called Fight Like an Animal. I don't know if anyone else is familiar with it, but it was about an environmental activist who's journey trying to get social and political change through to address the climate change, and how that just never how much that's failed over the last 20, 30 years, to be honest. And, my background's in political science, so I reached out to him, and it turned out to be a pretty nice antidote to a lot of the doomerism that I was thinking, like feeling and thinking. And we co-founded a think tank, which explores a lot of different things relating to the climate crisis, whether it's political psychology, carbon removal, survival, a whole bunch of things. And I'll be giving a talk on April 1st, exploring a little bit more of those ideas and introducing myself more to these spaces. Yeah, I think that's it.
What's the name of the think tank? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat.
Nice. I'll look into it. That's cool. Brendan, do you want to go?
Sure. My computer's being a little weird. Can you hear me? Or am I?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, cool. Hi everyone. I'm Brendan, and that's a hard one to summarize. I do a lot in sort of the metamodern space, and am pretty involved in that scene. But I also currently live on a homestead. I got really into permaculture doing my master's degree, and I thought I was going to go into academia, and I could feel like that was not a good direction, and that would just be, like many other systems, just sort of kind of falling apart. And so it was sort of a pivot, and came out of that master's program and decided to work at a nursery, like a plant nursery, because I wanted to learn more about plants. And was really influenced by, I don't know if people know, well, probably this crowd would, but like the Chelsea Green books, and in particular, got really influenced by Ben Falk's book, The Resilient Farm and Homestead. Mm. And there was something in there that just really resonated with me, which was that he presents a vision in which people using, this is how I interpreted it anyway, people using our sort of cognitive abilities, our reason, our thought, our ability, our unique capacities as humans, we can actually leverage that to promote biodiversity, to help nature be even more fecund and sort of assist in the natural processes in a way that that was very revolutionary for me, because a lot of the narrative that I had been influenced by up until that point was very much just sort of classic doomer, kind of a postmodern, like humanity's a cancer on the world, and we should all just sort of, you know, off ourselves, and everything would be better without us. And that was sort of, I couldn't really go in that direction, but my partner at the time was very influenced by that sort of way of thinking. And so this was sort of an alternative vision to appreciating human capacity to work with nature and to enhance biodiversity. And that felt like a lot more of an optimistic approach to thinking about these things, and felt like it appropriately situated people back into the mix, so that we didn't just feel like we just need to get out of nature's way, but there was actually a way of seeing things where, like, by generating productive, generative, vital systems, we can actually assist with all that. So that was really kind of a game changer for me, and I got really into permaculture, wanted to do what I could, yeah, to kind of work in that area. And it's a very long story, but the long and short of it is I ended up at this retreat center, which I now operate and run. And that's this picture behind me. So there's land here, and we've got organic gardens, and there's a lot more that we, you know, that there always is, that you can be doing to kind of increase sort of general biodiversity and sort of living systems and all that. But it feels very good to be rooted in a place where that is at least, you know, some of that is set up here. And so that's my current situation, is sort of running this retreat homestead. And then the last thing I guess I'll just say is that the metamodern stuff really illuminated that in a very interesting way for me when I got into the complexity side of things and started to be able to see in a new way how all of the permaculture relates to not just biodiversity, but biocomplexity, in a way that you can actually see permaculture as being about a complexification process and actually aiding nature in its sort of natural complexification. And so all of that really dovetailed very well with my kind of spiritual sensibilities and the feeling of participating with nature in sort of something like a cosmic complexification process. So anyway, all of that stuff is kind of entangled for me very much in sort of an embodied, but also kind of, I don't know, worldview perspective. That is, I think, a kind of crucial narrative shift that if we could help propagate that out into the world more, could help people get past sort of like a classic doomerist, like, this is awful, everything's going to fall apart, and why keep going, nihilism, to a different vision. So doomer optimism resonates with me a lot, because it's just sort of all right there in the title, which isn't being naive about all of the systemic issues that we face, but actually facing them head on, but then still doing stuff and still trying and still, like, you know, trying to live a full, rich, flourishing life in that context. And simultaneously realizing that, as Nate said earlier, like, a lot of stuff should probably break down. And this is actually what a flourishing life looks like anyway. Yeah, that's sort of my end.
That's nice. Thanks. I want to bring it back at some point to Jason and ask him, like, the liminal web metamodern stuff into doomer optimism and where it is now. But I want to let everybody to introduce themselves. Jeremy, do you want to go? Your lighting scheme looks like film noir. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it's just night. I appreciate the compliment. I'll try to keep this quick so we can get moving. Everything's fucked and it sucked, so fuck it. So that's kind of the vibe. I'm pot committed to Amsterdam because that's where my kids are growing up, and the what community we do have here is quite essential. So I'm very much in trying to vibe with you, Ashley, and like, okay, so we're stuck in the fucking city. The work of collapse and regeneration is going to happen as well. So what the fuck does it look like? I guess I do actually have to fucking meet my neighbors. Fuck. Oh God. Why is that the hardest part? So I'm just like really memeing into this vibe of minimum viable regeneration. What are like the baby steps we can take that get us on a slippery slope into like re-indigenization? Just developing a relationship with the land, is, you know, tenuous as that might be, as well as all the creatures we inhabit it with. And that's a minute. So anybody else?
That's great. I'm going to say Rian.
Exactly, you got it.
Yes.
So I also have only heard of doomers from like memes. I don't really know anything about the Doomer Optimism podcast. But I thought it was a very interesting talk idea, and so I'm here now and interested to learn. Something Brendan said resonated about like he, because I also have encountered a lot of the like, humans are a virus and like we should all kill ourselves. And that didn't vibe with him. And I also just think that in order to really be hooked into this metamodern way of thinking in the first place, almost like presupposes some sort of aspirational optimism to think that there is some sort of a unity. It seems really hard to be like super nihilistic and also be inclined towards metamodernism. So it's a nice sort of thing there. I also really am just interested in seeing the different ways that it looks like this idea is like how to in the same way, like people who play basketball do a lot of drills where like they get pushed around as they're falling so that they can learn to land without injuring themselves. And it seems like there's like an interest in like figuring out how can like society collapse gracefully without like tearing their ACL or whatever. And it's like a pretty cool idea and like intellectually stimulating. I don't really feel very anxious or pessimistic at all, but I just like thinking about complex ideas, and this is, you know, as complex as it gets, I suppose. So as far as anything personally, I have never really been a part of any of these sorts of spaces. I'm still like soaking everything in, but it's nice to meet you all, and excited to hear multiple people near-ish Chicago. So maybe I'll see you in person at some point. It'd be pretty cool.
Awesome. Simon, we know you.
Yes. Sorry, it's insane here. I have three small children, and it is, you know, that time of night when yep. things start to go crazy, but I'll be quick. I work on my family's small farm. We have a U-Pick fruit and vegetable farm, fourth generation here in upstate New York. And then I also have a day job, working in a local university library, doing visual resources, digitizing large collections, archives collections, visual resources collections, to make online digital resources. But I'm mainly here, you know, in the farming and the doing side of life. And that's what's brought me to Doomer Optimism. I've made tons of really awesome in real life friends through Doomer Optimism across the US. And I just thought I'd come check out what this was all about.
Nice.
So thanks.
Welcome. All right, Jason.
Yeah.
I was going to pick on you, I guess, first after these intros, because you're our link to the liminal web and, you know, metamodern world into Doomer Optimism, which is now, I think, maybe co-evolving, like separately evolving towards, I don't know if the same things, different things, but I'd be curious your, like, just brief description of where you see all that.
Yeah, well, I think I see what we're trying to do with Doomer Optimism as kind of an applied metamodernism. And what I mean by that, you know, if we think of the most basic formulation of metamodernism, and if we want to get more, you know, complex, we can ask Brendan or Brent Cooper here, who know a lot about it. But, you know, the basic is what we're trying to get beyond postmodernism, right? Postmodernism of deconstructing the grand narratives of the 20th century. We know that they're flawed in many ways. But we can't end with deconstruction. And so what does it mean to incorporate those critiques, but then move forward with a positive, pragmatic vision and one that's integrated the best of all of the previous kind of epochs and stages of humans and human civilizations and human, you know, living arrangements, you know, all the way back throughout history and different cultures. And how do we kind of integrate all of the best of, you know, all of these different cultures and time periods, including modernism, by the way, including, you know, modern medicines and, you know, many of the things that, you know, that maybe there's a lot of things that we don't actually need with around consumerism and our diets and, you know, unnecessary healthcare, but there's probably a lot of things that we want to keep as well. And then centering, of course, I think our ecological realities, and not just thinking about it, but how do we become ecological ourselves? And I think for me, that's a core part of kind of applied metamodernism as it manifests in Doomer Optimism. So I don't know how well that answers your question, Ashley.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to rip off of that.
Well, and I'm curious, like, I don't know if you've been tapped into the metamodernist space much, Jason, like, you know, you have a lot going on where, like, both of us are not even, like, fully tapped into Doomer Optimism. Yeah. I should just say our podcast is run as a, for those who don't know, run as a collective. So, like, sometimes people, you know, a lot of people who aren't Jason and I host, including Josh and Nate a bunch. And yes, anyways, I was just wondering, like, my sense from Doomer Optimism is that it is kind of evolving into more real life, tangible, very practical kind of directions, and people are just sort of sharing from their specific local contexts what's been working. They're just making friendships. Friendships are turning into projects, you know, events, that kind of thing. And I'm wondering, I don't know, just where you see Doomer Optimism, and if you think there's people who are super involved in the liminal web stuff, if you see a similar kind of trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw that trajectory originally. I haven't been that tapped into liminal web meta modern spaces for a few years, right? There's only so much bandwidth I have for online stuff.
Yeah, right.
Doomer Optimism is more enough. Than enough. So I'm a little bit behind in kind of all of those conversations. So, you know, I'm up with like meta modernism stuff, you know, circa 2018, you know, 2020. And then, but I think it was all converging, right? That was kind of my, you know, my sense when we started Doomer Optimism, is that there's just a lot of different scenes going on. People focused on consciousness, people focused on agroecology, you know, natural building, alternative living systems, people focused on how do we get beyond capitalism, right? How do we, you know, develop mutual aid for the internet age, you know, all of these different scenes going on. And it seems like they are converging, but very slowly, right? And there's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of human drama, even within Doomer Optimism, right? Like there's a lot of ideological diversity in Doomer Optimism. And you know, people fight all the time, people have left, you know, we have dedicated haters now, and you know, all of that stuff. So, but I think, you know, if I'm being optimistic about all of these scenes, it's that we are slowly converging, and hopefully what we need, you know, in each other, and the tools and the affordances that we can generate in this time between worlds, you know, will become very useful when, you know, I guess the more biophysical realities, you know, start forcing our hand, and we'll have plenty of resources available. And I'm optimistic about that.
I'll just say out loud, I put it in the chat, but if anyone feels like they have a rebuttal or some comment that is coming up while we're going, this doesn't have to just be panelists. We could just make it a conversation. But one thing that came up when you were speaking, I'm realizing Jordan Hall has been on Doomer Optimism a couple times, and he's a kind of grouped into the liminal web-ish space a bit. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, maybe Brendan can speak on this, but he most recently was on Doomer Optimism and Jim Rudd and a bunch of different podcast, your podcast, I think, right, Brendan? Talking about his recent conversion to Christianity. So I'm just wondering, that seems to be a theme that's kind of going around in Doomer Optimism as well. I'm wondering if it's sort of how it's been received in the metamodern world.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. I mean, I'm probably going to be exploring this question for the next couple of weeks or months, even, because it's a pivot. It's happening. And I just had, I talked to Jordan, and today I talked to Paul Vander Clay, and there's a big Christian shift. So it's interesting to hear that that's also something you're experiencing. I think that there are, what would you say? There are, like, you know, more or less successful ways that kind of thing can be navigated. And so I think it's something we should care about and try to, you know, speaking of stewardship, you know, think about how those conversations get stewarded. I don't know, in the context of this conversation, I feel like there's an interesting potential opening there in terms of how more kind of traditional modes of thinking and living might be able to be integrated successfully into a contemporary metamodern context. And so, you know, how certain kinds of, like, return to the land and homesteading and different kinds of stewardship of earth frameworks, you know, could be networked to certain ways that people are engaging Christianity or other forms of sort of traditional religion is I think a good is something that we'll be probably thinking, needing to be thinking about more and talking about more, as I think that those things relate. I don't know. I mean, that this could very easily veer into like a more spiritual, philosophical, theological conversation, but I don't think that that's where that would want to go. But yeah, it's definitely something that's happening, and I think we should be aware of it and try to, you know, I don't want to sound like people like have strings that they control things, or even that anyone has any kind of influence over this stuff in any profound way. But I think that it does matter how we navigate this kind of trad trend to kind of expand it a little bit more. Cause like there's really healthy things that can come out of that in terms of like returning to certain traditional ways of being and living in the world. And then there are all these pathologies too. So we want to like bring in the salutary, you know, stuff, and we want to avoid the pathology. So yeah, going forward, I think it's a really important thing to have on our radar.
Nate or Josh, you guys wanted to jump in at all at this point?
I can say as you're talking, is, you know, it's like the, you know, I have the sense that the sort of the particular flavor of rationality of the modern world is just become so sterile and boring, and is a clear dead end, physically, biophysically, spiritually, emotionally. We're just at this dead end, you know, and so there's this openness, I think, and it's been for a while. One of my things I'm always very interested in is sort of the, you know, the kind of the horseshoe where the crunchy left blends into the right and the crunchy right, and it's more interesting than ever right now. But you know, you had like the new age left kind of was sort of like, I think, seeing this sort of dead end of this sort of hyper rationality and kind of went this new age direction with it. And it's kind of swung in this really bizarre and fascinating way in this sort of trad direction, because, you know, it's like this, we need other ways of knowing. We need other ways of experiencing the world. We need other ways of thinking that aren't there in this, again, for lack of a better term, hyper rationalistic modernity that, clearly is broken. Like clearly there's no way forward with it. And so of course we're sort of experimenting and exploring new ways of knowing, but, and there's this tension between, you know, yeah, return, going back, and, new age fluff. And a lot of it is fantasy to me, you know, unless, you know, you find a way for it to be embodied. Which I think is why to me, the land, it always comes back to the land and being a part of a web of ecology and community. Otherwise it's fake and imaginary. So it has to, you know, just have to, you gotta get your hands dirty in some way. It can be literally, you know, farming. I mean, there's a lot of agrarianism in this, but I don't think it's inherent. You can get your hands dirty in the work of, you know, community, in the work, you know, in urban areas. I don't think it never has been necessary to be on the land, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it is. I live on the land. I can't imagine not at this point. Too much concrete seems gross, but whatever. That's
my cross to bear.
People can have their own trip with that if they want. It's not my business. but yeah, so that was sort of what came up for me, just sort of, yeah, of course we're thinking about different ways of thinking, because it's the very manner of thinking that's broken.
Josh, you have anything to add at the moment? You're muted.
Mute. Still, it doesn't matter how long I do this, I still mess up. briefly, yeah. I'd say in the past couple of months, I kind of backed myself into feeling like I could call myself, you know, sort of an unmodified Christian. And I won't go into too much detail about that, other than a couple of things. There's a Mitch Hedberg joke where he talks about, that would suck if you were a priest and the day came you had to fight the devil and you're like, oh shit, I didn't think that was for real. And so I kind of got to the point where I'm like, oh, that shit is for real. It's angels and demons and a giant cosmic battle of good versus evil. And that's that's real. It's a weird experience to have. And also, my wife and I, we have a young son. He's 16 months old, and I grew up going to church and very mainstream Protestant church. And it just occurred to me that even though it's been years and years and years since I attended any church, and we just started going about 6 weeks ago, but I feel like I'm so grateful that I had that experience growing up as a kid, that I learned about the Bible and God and Jesus, you know, whether I grew up to follow that path or what, I just was like, wow, I really appreciate actually having that background. You know, it's like being a person who comes from something and knowing kind of where I belong, you know. And I just wanted that for my son, and also the fellowship, like what Jeremy was saying about the need to get to know your neighbors and stuff. I think we're really looking for fellowship, and also to kind of have an extended family of relatives, you know, as our son grows up. And so I wondered for anybody who's kind of been mulling around the religion space in recent times, if like what motivated you, or if like having a kid or kids was a big factor, or how have you all come at it?
I know Jason has thoughts probably, but I'll just say recently, I grew up Lutheran in a Catholic neighborhood in Chicago, but I went to a Catholic school and my husband's Catholic, and I went to a Lutheran church around here recently, and there was like, you know, 10 people in the pews, and I felt really sad about that. And then I went to a Catholic church, the one my husband grew up in, and there's just, you know, tens of people, and then on some days hundreds of people, and it's just totally different. So anyways, I went there I went to this church this last weekend. It's the weekend of the Southside Irish Parade in Chicago. And in that mass, it was like the St. Patrick's Day mass, and there was literally standing room only. And the police department came with their bagpipes and played bagpipes for everybody. And it was like, then there was this officer that got shot in Chicago like a year ago, police officer who was injured and like unable to walk and came in a wheelchair the first year, and then came down the parish aisle with a cane the next year, and then this year was walking down, and then everybody stood up and clapped, and I was like this is a place where community happens here, you know. And if I weren't Catholic, I would be missing some of this like pageantry and community and like an outward display of values, you know, and then like camaraderie with that, like, oh wow, look at this officer, he came all the way like to this parish, and he's been recognized by everybody here, and like this guy's a hero, and you know, really actually like fighting the bad guys, fighting an actual criminal in this case, you know, not that the police are always right, but anyways, it was just really moving. And then like the bagpipes was just like culture from Ireland and Scotland, and you know, that came over to Chicago, big Irish neighborhood. And so I don't know, this, I think what Brendan was saying, like these traditional ways of knowing, they're kind of like, it's just all tied up in these institutions, and like, you know, they really do, they are us, like we our presence breathes life into these places and communities. And it doesn't always only have to be church. It was just one example I had recently, but you know, I've had other examples in Chicago too, like in schools and the parade, and you know, different places where civic activity happens that I'm like kind of excited about actually. Jason?
I don't know if I have much to say about this topic right now. I used to be quite religious. I was a Baha'i faith, and I was also raised around the Native American church. Had a lot of religious experiences. Was very serious about my faith in my 20s. Ended up leaving the faith, kind of going through this process where I could never quite let go of my religious sensibility. Got back into spirituality through meditation, and I can see myself becoming religious again. I just don't know what form that would take. Even if I was like to imagine myself becoming a Christian, like I'm like, well, there's many different kinds of Christianity, right? Like becoming a Baptist, and where I live in Southern Appalachia, that's would be the natural place for me to go. It would be very different than becoming a Catholic or an Eastern Orthodox, which seems to be quite the fad these days. And like if you had asked me this a year or two ago, I would have said, well, we need to develop a new kind of a metamodern religion that incorporates all of the elements of prior times. But I just don't really, like, that doesn't have any traction in my day-to-day kind of how I relate to the world and how I see things. Maybe it does in some places. Some places, you know, they're really kind of having these breakthroughs, and not just personal spirituality, but communal spirituality and how that relates to politics, how that relates to, systems change, all of that. But I guess I don't have much to add, just because I'm between religions right now.
Well, one thing I would just say that I admire about you, Jason, is that, and I think maybe Nate wants to talk too, but so Brennan was saying it earlier, there are these people exploring traditional trad things, but then there's people who take it too far into totally weird places, and we know of examples of these people, and that's no good either. So just going headfirst into like whatever trendy ideology is coming up is also not healthy. And I like really appreciate your dipping your toe in skepticism about that kind of thing. And neither is the extreme like rationality attitude. And I think that's kind of like where we are on Doomer Optimism, is always trying to take a nuanced view there to not go too far too fast into these different things.
Yeah, I think my big thing is, you know, I've always had a, you know, I guess you can say a relationship to God. You know, I pray, I meditate, but it's hard for me to settle on one specific doctrine instead of dogma that I could actually take seriously, right? And not just metaphorically. And I think if I was to say become a Christian, I'd want to take it seriously. And you know, that would be the challenge there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Nate, you're probably in a similar boat, right?
Tiptoeing.
Yeah, I practice heathenism right now.
Did you say heathenism or hedonism?
Heathenism. Not as a hedonism. No, that's that. No, not. Well, yeah, far. That too. But I'm not proud of that part, I guess.
Not registered with the church.
So yeah, it's, I grew up without, like, completely, you know, unchurched, but I'm fascinated and aware of the need, and you know what might be interesting to many, I'm sure, because it is sort of one of those things that's people talk about. I'm absolutely influenced by, you know, psychedelic use, both when I was younger and ongoing, because I was a very kind of rationalistic atheist, you know, throughout my teenage years and whatnot, you know, kind of that smug type that we all want to punch, unless you're here, I'm sorry to anybody. But then I tripped and I was like, well, that's not right. This is a weird, weird, weird world. And got really, really into that for a while, and, you know, enough to sort of like very much cure me of like these hyper-rationalistic delusions of that we know what's going on. But then I just decided to live my life for the most part and kind of leave that alone. It leaves me, yeah, Jason, kind of the similar spot where, you know, the only, my hang up or my difficulty, I guess, with religion is, you know, to me, it's like the kind of commitment that I would give to it, you know, like it's something I have to believe is true. I can't, you know, so it's sort of like, which comes first, the chicken or egg? You do believe it's true? Do you start doing it even though you don't believe it? Like that's very tricky to me. You know, I have a lot that I do believe is true, and a lot of, and I appreciate actually Christianity more than I ever have in my life right now. But it all settles on that sort of metaphysical leap. I mean, if it sounds like I'm kind of rationalizing my process, I mean, that's exactly what I'm doing. I don't know.
don't get to psychoanalyze yourself, Nate. Jeremy?
There's a need there, right? Yeah. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
So, two kids, son 7, daughter 4. So the provocation around children and how that suddenly makes this topic much more real when I'm thinking about how to like, how the fuck do I like frame a brain well? Like, Jesus. Maybe literally Jesus, like maybe actually. The only thing the path that I'm running, the experiment I'm running on my kids, oh, yeah, that feels good, is mythology. And just to like really to frame up mythology in lots of different ways and say, hey, these are stories that we have like identified as this is how the fucking world works, and to line them all fucking up and say, take your pick. I will say that rituals fucking feels good and is a very powerful thing. I still am still actively in the design space. I don't know what that works. It's probably much easier, I can say concretely, to just pick a book and go with the rituals from that book, based on the nerds that you like to hang out with where you live. Anybody else?
Brendan?
Thanks. I just also I mean, all these things are so important right now, and they seem to be coming to a head in a very intense way. And it's very interesting to see these trends over the past year, even just over the past few months, that this is like a thing. So I've already kind of made the case that we need to, or not the case, but I've already said that, we need to be very sensitive to this. I will just make a case for, or a plea that that we be aware of the danger as well. I don't think that many people know the danger. And this is something that increasingly I feel like I can speak to that a lot of people can't, because a lot of people are finding the attraction to traditional religion, having been unchurched or not having a tradition, having grown up atheist. And there's just a lot of people who feel like there's this thing missing, and it's this religion-shaped hole, but they don't know what it's like to live in that world. And that's where I come from and had to leave in a very painful way. So I also want to just throw into this the conversation that a lot of these things can and should be developed into new spaces and into emergently complex spaces. My real concern at the moment is that this is going to collapse into kind of a reactionary shift. And it's just that, like, yeah, modernity sucks, man. It's like it's got all these, it's a self-terminating system and all this, and like we got to get out of it. And postmodernism doesn't help us much, right? So there's this turn to the traditional, and there's a lot of attraction there. And some of that is really good in the ways we're already talking about. Like, we've got to get back to bioregional awareness and knowing your neighbors and getting your hands dirty and like all that's good stuff. Ritual, yes. But I just want to make the case that, like, yeah, a lot of people are going to find that through sort of like, well, I'll pick this book and I'll jump into it. But when you pick that book that was written thousands of years ago, reflecting a kind of Bronze Age mentality of existence without any of the insights of the modern or the postmodern, you're sort of foreclosing a whole way of seeing the world that's also really valid. And so I would invite people to not give up on the idea that, like, or how I'll put it this way, find a way in which you can feel like you are a leader in which, whatever context you find yourself in, whether that is a traditional religion, whether that's seeking for something new that hasn't yet shown up, people in this space are aware of complexity, and people in this space are aware of things in a way that makes them leaders, that makes them have a novel perspective on things, that like think of yourself as being a spear point, and I think a lot of that can get lost if people just try to get subsumed into a communal collectivity that will give them the ritual and the story and all this stuff. So yeah, I'd invite people to think very strongly about, whether you want to enmesh yourself in a pre-existing traditional religious framework or whether you want to explore new avenues. you know, be a leader, be someone who brings the complexity into the situation. Because another thing I'll just throw out is that a lot of the communal aspect that you're going to find is going to be very resistant to a lot of the other things that you care a lot about, right? You know, climate change, climate justice, all this stuff, right? You enmesh yourself in traditional contexts, people will deny that climate change is real. People will say, well, yeah, but that's why the rapture is going to happen. And like, we don't have to worry about this stuff and et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole number of justification systems that are built up in a traditional mode that are just have inoculated themselves to and sort of are in a state of denial about our current social circumstances. And the people who are on this call are aware of those things. So however you want to bring that into that conversation and whatever that conversation is, you know, that's something that shouldn't be missed. So I don't know if that lands for anyone, but just going to throw that out there.
If nobody minds, go ahead.
I think Josh was going to say something too.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I've had a thought that I want to join like some kind of separatist movement or something like that. Do y'all ever think you just want to become like a separatist? Yeah, like some kind of Taliban, but not exactly the Taliban.
Tanner?
I was going to bring up the idea, at least in my own anecdotal, like personal context of finding religion of a sorts or meaning and trying to do something about the climate crisis and trying to like involve myself in understanding the political and social forces behind that and fighting back against it. Like for me, that feels like a spiritual experience, an experience, a spiritual calling that like isn't entangled in all these traditional structures or religious dogmas that could get in the way. And yeah, I'm just wondering if that resonates with this space also.
I mean, there's a lot to say. I'm not quite sure I got the kind of the real upshot of what you're saying, Tanner. Are you saying that, like, how do we navigate these different belief systems with, you know, our worry about these kind of existential biophysical crises or?
What I'm saying is just like, I don't know, to Brendan's point about, you know, the reactionary turn to going to traditional religion is something we want to keep out for and like a way of still filling that hole and feeling like there's some kind of, I don't know, that some kind of feeling of community and calling, some kind of spirituality. I'm just saying like we could do that, we could manifest that feeling as a response to the ecological crisis. Like when I go out in nature and I can feel the pain of the trees. Like last year I was just hiking out in the Adirondacks and it was like 90 degrees in October, which normally is like, you know, it's snowing in upstate New York in October. At least that's what I remember from my childhood. And just feeling all that direct personal relationship with nature and the suffering that's like there. I don't know, it feels motivating and religious in my experience, is I guess what I'm trying to get at.
I would just say, when I'm listening to this, I just think two things. One, I'm really interested in, well, I guess they're kind of related things. I'm really interested in the humility aspect that comes with joining an already existing group. And it doesn't have to be religion, but like, you know, these people developed this organization, institution, whatever, over the course of a long, many years. That doesn't mean that it's an infallible organization, but it also means that there's a lot of good to it if it's continuing on and there's something that's meaningful. And I think like a lot of us probably, you know, kind of highly educated people kind of think in terms of like let's we're, we've got big brains, we can just like create something completely new. And I think that's a little hubristic. So I think the humility is really important. But then I think also like you just can bring multiple selves to places and to different people. You know, you can care about the climate crisis, you can care about nature, but not necessarily have to talk about that with your, you know, religious friends. This is my daughter. You know, so you can bring different selves to different places. And I think there's a humility in that. So that was the second thing I was thinking, like, you know, like I can have super deep and passionate views about, you know, the environment, but it's like that's not going to resonate with everybody. You know, I've got to just find what part of myself to bring to different relationships.
You know, I was gonna bring this up too, like as a tension sort of that I think is kind of within Doomer Optimism. By that, I just kind of mean like I've noticed between me and you, I've noticed it at times. It's kind of like this institutional thing, because I'm still of the sort of like anti-institutional framework in my mind at this point. Like I pretty much think our institutions are untrustworthy and broken. I'm not interested in being a part of them. And you're in a place now where you're just like rejoining many of them and like fighting to take it back. And I think that's, I said at the beginning jokingly as a tension. I mean, I respect that. And it's like, whatever, that's what you're doing. It's just sort of like, but from where I sit, I just like, that's still a big struggle for me to want to be a part of a lot of the institutions that seem so fundamentally not keeping with the times as far as connected with reality, connected with what I perceive the is happening in the world around me. So I think there's an interesting tension there. And it's like, you know, on the one hand, it's like, yeah, the idea of just like, okay, we'll start over and build something. I mean, I understand the point that it is a tall order kind of hubristic. I'm not saying I have an answer to it. But I also feel interacting with these institutions makes me feel bad. Like it makes me feel very bad. And I'm like, I don't want to do things that make me feel that bad. And doesn't not bad in a way of like, well, I'm doing the work, you know, it's hard, but it's doing the work. It's like bad in a way of like, ugh, I'm gross, I need to take a shower. And this makes me feel like less human.
Well, I know we're not going to solve this tonight, but you know, I just think also like one of our strengths, or at least what we try to talk about on the podcast, is this thought of like you don't have to take one thing as like a whole package deal wholesale. Like you don't have to be trad and then just like never drive in a car again. Like, you know, there's like it's okay to just like I don't know, this a lot of this comes from Jason and like his meta-modern approach to me at least. It's just you can kind of pick and choose some of these the best or what you're willing to accept from some parts of institutions and just kind of navigate it. I don't know, I don't really know if it's satisfying, but there's no simple way forward with these things. And even joining an institution isn't necessarily a simple way forward. It's extremely difficult and tenuous, and you have to keep your head about you and not, you know, like Brendan was saying, like get caught up in some of the more dangerous aspects of some of these institutions, and staying out of them is neither like a free pass, you know, completely. You're losing something. So
Mostly hate the government, but I love the NRCS.
A distinction that keeps coming to my mind here is people have talked about, you know, kind of certain reactionary tendencies. You know, they're even like getting back to the land. You know, you can like, you know, people make the argument that that's a reactionary tendency, right? Usually an eco-modernist would say that. You know, and you can make that argument about going back to traditional religion. You know, for me, like that's the framing, a more healthy framing or helpful framing is recovery instead of, you know, return, instead of returning, recover, right? Like bringing, you know, like we've gone so fast into modernity, hypermodernity, that we've discarded a lot of things that now we're kind of realizing, oh, maybe those, you know, had some value in them. But we don't want to like, you know, so some people are like, okay, we just got to go back, right? And for me, that's not really a viable option. And so it's like, then it's a practice of how do we, you know, with humility, go back and understand what we've lost, But contrast this with understanding the necessities of today's world and the realities of today's world, right? So how do we recover what we've lost? But then bring it into this new context, right? Bring it into a modern, you know, a meta-modern synthesis, you could say, you know, if we want to be fancy about it. You know, that's a very abstract, you know, way to put it. What that means in practice in any particular issue is a whole different story, right? What does that mean for education, right? Like, okay, you know, a lot of people are fed up with the public school system, so they want to, you know, they want to homeschool, but, you know, they realize that that's, you know, like Nate, right? And for a lot of people, you know, that works out very well. For a lot of people, it doesn't. And what about the people whose parents are working all the time and, you know, can't afford to homestead, right? Can't afford to have one person stay home and do that, right? So then we go back to the public institutions. It's like, okay, well, how can we take the insights from the homesteading movement and bring them into, you know, the public schools or maybe the, you know, the schooling cooperatives or whatever kind of form, you know, is kind of suitable to us in our context. But to me, that's the practice. And it's very messy and difficult, but it's not as simple like, you know, avoid, you know, it's not as simple. For me, it's not a simple binary of we need to have more humility. So let's go back to what happened in the past. And, oh, we need to avoid reactionary tendencies, right? That's a false dichotomy to me.
Yeah, and makes for endless podcast fodder, yeah. Navigating these but things.
It does do that.
Matilda, did you have something you wanted to say?
Hey, everyone. Yeah, sorry for tuning in quite late. It's a fascinating conversation to jump into halfway through. Yeah, I guess like I lowered my hand because Jason kind of touched a little bit on what I wanted to say when he said, like, well, maybe we just take the insights from the more progressive things that we're not quite logistically able to adopt just yet, while also working with the institutions that we have. And I guess my point was a little bit similar. I think there's something to be said for being able to play both an inside and an outside game with ourselves and the institutions that we're creating. I think like, particularly you were talking about religion earlier, and I think this is very much an institution where, you know, you have to be aware that you're kind of taking on a hell of a lot of code there. And there are some like functional aspects of religion that you might want to take on board. There might be some really fun mythos and stuff like that as well. And, you know, it's nice. It's already integrated into society. There's a church right down your street and people know what language you're talking about when you say you're from the church of XYZ. And that's, I can see how that's attractive. And at the same time, I think, you know, there is such a thing as like, in my mind, that might seem a bit Hegelian, but there's such a thing as like societal kind of development. And I kind of feel like there's something, I think this is also a little bit in resonance with what Brendan was saying earlier, like something a bit regressive about adopting codes that, you know, got us broadly this far with a lot of like limps and hurts along the way. But yeah, I guess I feel concerned that taking on that kind of code as our operating system has serious limitations. And I think like the way I look at it is like, what are the ways that we can like advance by using the institutions that we have in a kind of practical way, while also remaining detached and being a lot more critical in creating new code and basically engaging with these institutions in a way that's quite open textured and allow us to bring new kind of code into this. I'm using this word in a very kind of like open way because it will take different forms based on the institution we're talking about. But yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense, but thanks for letting me.
You know,
anyone else want to pick up?
Fun.
Oh, then. No, I'm just asking if anyone else wants to pick up on this thread or these threads.
Ben? I was going to say that for the fun of playing this role, I guess I'm not necessarily committing to like this is absolutely what I think, but like using institutions in that way or like the machine we've called it before. Like I do, you understand the argument pragmatically for that, but I just feel like there is a very large psychological and spiritual danger to exposure to that. You know, like it's nasty. And you know, part of me sees it, you know, the way that it captures, you know, people's hearts and minds so readily and, I'm afraid of it, to be honest. So it's a sort of a fearful response in a way, and I think as an act of self-preservation, preserving my independence of spirit and mind, I kind of try to minimize my contact. But I understand that, you know, I understand that in a way I've been able, because I've been not as zealous as some people I know, but fairly zealous in creating a distance from it, and that's not reasonable. So I mean, I think it's just an interesting. There's a tremendous tension there, I think, within myself and between the people here that I don't have an answer.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier. Oh, Ben, you can go, but just briefly, like one thing that, like, it is endless podcast fodder because we're like neither like modern, but okay with some modern things, nor trad, somewhere in the middle, but where in the middle depends on your context. Like neither, you know, extremely tech nor completely Luddite, like not institutions or not totally into institutions, not totally into like being completely out of all institutions. And then the last one I wrote down while you guys were talking was neither totally in your head nor totally hands-on. And so it's just like, you know, that you can never be, you're like, we're just constantly navigating these things. This is the Doomer world. To me, the interesting part of the Doomer world is figuring those, like, where do you fall on these spectrums, you know? And I think Ben wanted to say something, and then Brendan.
Yeah, it's been a really engaging conversation to listen to, by the way. It's really fascinating to get everybody's vantage points on this. I guess what I'd love to throw in here is, I'll just kind of, when I explore these things, I'll try to catch myself and say, okay, what's at my deepest root? What am I really trying to get from this? Am I really trying to understand the nature of reality and then live according to that understanding of reality? Am I shopping for a group to join? And being, you know, just passionate about judging any particular inclination. Like, what am I really looking for? What am I missing? Do I want to be part of a group? Do I want to be part of some group purpose? Do I want to have some relationship to what I see going on in the world right now? Just for myself, at least, I grew up really Christian. And then I left when I was 20 and spent most of my 20s kind of dealing with nihilism and pessimism. And then found the metacrisis. And I was like, okay, well, I might want to apply myself to the metacrisis. But then I kept asking myself, well, why? Like, if I, you know, blip out of existence at death, like all of this is just a drop in the bucket, why would I apply myself to all of this? And I had what I guess you could call a near-death experience, but like kind of a weird, like supernatural feeling kind of experience in 2020. And that got me curious. And I was like, okay, maybe there is something more to the phenomenon of consciousness. So everybody has their own journey in this, but I started being more deliberate about, okay, provided that there is, because I like agnosticism, I still call myself agnostic, but provided that there is something else beyond just this physical form, I hesitate to call it anything in particular, but that I exist beyond the physical form in some meaningful capacity. Well, then what is most worth doing then? Is there any objectivity to that? Is it just teaches? I don't know, just, you know, does it matter? Just pick something you want to do for the finite life that you have. I've found for myself, like, well, yeah, there's some subjectivity there, but it would be a bit more edifying to operate in a way where I'm learning and growing amidst this life and helping other people learn and grow in this life, because being that this all does ultimately play out eventually, this is just one century of many, it'll all play out. If there's anything that's gained that isn't just this, you know, in this physical form that just dies out, it's growth. If we exist beyond this in any meaningful form, whether it's reincarnation or heaven or whatever it is, if you've developed and grown, that's going to transcend this life. That's going to be some meaningful takeaway that has meaning to it. And so I've used this framing quite a bit, but I always go honestly back to Groundhog Day and Bill Murray. Like Bill Murray in that movie is like trying to, you know, he's operating a certain way at the beginning of the movie. He's kind of an asshole. He doesn't really care about the well-being of anybody but himself. And then he's forced by repeating that day to confront that and find that that's just not a meaningful way to exist. And he starts, through sheer necessity, change the way he's operating. By the end of the movie, he's optimizing for the well-being of everybody, not just himself, and finds that's fulfilling. And so I've been experimenting myself, like, okay, in this finite life that I have that may or may not continue after my death, of all the ways I can approach it, I'm not going to just, you know, kind of shop around, be like, oh, like what's going to be something that transcends this life in some capacity, that provided that there's meaningful existence beyond this life, I've contributed in a meaningful way that's not in some temporary form by getting life to go on longer than otherwise would. Because there's no scenario. We'll all be dead in 100 years. The civilization will end at some point. I don't consider that a pessimistic outlook. It's just reality. And so coming to terms with that is, okay, can I enjoy my time here, but then contributing to something that is truly meaningful beyond the finite, something infinite or transcendent in some capacity. That I find that truly meaningful. I think that's kind of the essence of metamodernism, is finding that for yourself. Because you're not going to get everybody into the same banner, but if that's Christianity for you, that's Christhood versus like Buddhahood and Buddhism, like, or some other kind of sense of spirituality. Like, you know, I really grew to enjoy, I think it was called Journey of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton. And so finding some version of spirituality, sensibility that makes the most sense to you, realistically, like this isn't just some club I'm joining. This is now, I can identify myself as a spiritual being within this framework. That resonates with me. Now that gives me some purpose beyond just maximizing physical sensation in this finite life or something. And then that seems truly meaningful. So I don't know if that's helpful to anybody, but that was my two cents I wanted to throw in.
That's beautiful. Brendan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, thanks. And sorry, I wish I could build off of that in a meaningful way, Ben, but I had a slightly different thought. But yeah, I guess I just wanted to throw this in, is that actually what you were saying a minute ago was like, for me, what really captures something crucial, right? You're like, oh, it's this thing, but it's also this thing. And like, we need a balance. And like, actually, when you look at all aspects of life, like there's some kind of spectrum that like, we actually can't go way over here and we can't go way over here. We got to find this balance, right? And that kind of, balancing, that sort of appreciating that there's an axis that we need to like find ourselves in the fulcrum space of, in an optimal grip kind of way, etc. It's a relational or a relative way of being that recognizes different kinds of value and finding that optimal space that can kind of negotiate between those things. And you named a couple of those different axes, but there are many. I think that that way of seeing is precisely what's in danger of being lost if you give yourself too much over to a traditional perspective, because the danger of the traditional is that it wants to absolutize, is that it wants you to say it's this truth and only this truth, and you have to sign your name on the dotted line and you have to go out and you've got to preach this as being the absolute transcendent reality, etc. And so however people want to navigate this question, I just would hope that that dynamic that you named is always a part of their sense making, right? You can go to church and you can do the ritual and you can be part of a community and all of that. But as soon as you give up on, well, what about this? Or, hey, but then, you know, dot, 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 that there's some kind of openness there, right? And I'm worried that a lot of people will feel pushed, compelled to foreclose on that openness. And that can happen all sorts of ways, but there's so many pressures in that worldview space to want to foreclose on the openness of like being open to other religions, being open to other, you know, races, being open to other nationalities, being open to things is what can very easily force you into an ideological, affirmational, creedal, dogmatic stance of like, this is the way it is, and this is the way it has to be for everyone, and everyone else who disagrees with me is wrong. There's a certain attractor in that worldview space that's going to, you know, pull you in like a tractor beam to that. And I think that people need to be really aware of that. And I just wanted to name that. So yeah, if people are able to operate in traditional and modern and postmodern and all these different contexts and find that right space, because they're able to do that continual toggling and negotiation between this and that and all that balancing, then great. You know, maybe it's like Sunday morning, you just really want that ritual, but then like you know, you hurt your hand and you want some ibuprofen, and then it's like, oh, actually, yeah, like I need to work that in too, right? And so that there is a plurality and a balance there that needs to be taken into account. And I guess I just wanted to emphasize that, give voice to it. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to this recording, but there's sort of like a, for me, like an increasingly urgent sense of like, oh no, like I'm very concerned about the direction that things are going in around this like interest in and this compulsion to try to find a particular traditional home. And as much as I understand it and I can relate to it very deeply, and it's something that I and my wife and I, you know, we talk a lot about, I'm very worried about what this will look like in 5 years if we don't kind of get that right. So I just wanted to say that what you were naming, that sense making strategy, is really important. And if you can always kind of identify that in your own thinking about things, then you're probably not too far off, you know. If we can have certain kind of sense making mechanisms or strategies like that we can just kind of have as our lodestar, kind of true north, then like, yeah, we can explore all these different permutations of incorporating, trying to integrate modern, pre-modern, whatever. But we got to hold on to what's really important there. And because ultimately we can lose a lot of value in trying to do these other things. Anyway, that's basically.
No, that's good. I'll just make one tiny comment and I'll pass it off to Matilda. But I would also I completely agree. Everybody just needs to keep their wits about them, but staying out of traditional structures is not the only way to do this. There's plenty of orthodoxy outside of religion. Nate mentioned it at the beginning of his introduction. There's like leftist orthodoxy. There's political orthodoxy. There's degrowth orthodoxy. Like, you can go in any extreme subgroup and find orthodoxy where you're not allowed to think outside or talk. There's a taboo around, you know, questioning or having, you know, open discussion and like open sense making. And so for me, like, yes to all the warnings, but it's not just in one place, it's everywhere. So I guess even worse than the way you said it. But it's still, there's no way to deal with it but to deal with it and to like keep our wits about us and follow our morality and our intuition and like, and then model it, which is helpful about the podcast if you can at least think through these difficulties. Matilda?
Thanks. Yeah, Brendan, thanks for your comment. I found it really interesting. I just wanted to add that, like, I think maybe, like, I'm trying to like feel into the shape of this thing. Like, what is it that draws people towards, you know, like tradition, and what is it that kind of, you know, creates resistance? Like, how can we like try to make sense of the shape of that? And I think it's something like the thing that pulls us kind of back into tradition at a time when, you know, by some metrics, we have loads of different ways to like make sense of the world and engage with it and, you know, tell ourselves whatever stories we want. And I think it is something around living in a world that has a lot more uncertainty and complexity than what we kind of have evolved to deal with on various levels. And obviously, like, tradition is something that gives you, it is a cosmology of certainty, right? And I think we easily yearn for that, especially because another thing that really lacks nowadays for us is the kind of connection that allows us to weave meaning-making together. I think I was thinking of this thing on the Emerge podcast around like making a distinction between sense-making and meaning-making. And I feel like sense-making is something where like modernity is probably pretty helpful. You know, like having things like science and things like that is helpful for like making sense of things on some level. And meaning-making is much more something that's like a felt sense, something that brings together, you know, the stories and behaviors you've inherited from like your parents and your fellow school kids and, you know, like the snow in the Adirondacks in October when you were a kid and stuff like that. And so that's very much something that you create as a web. And tradition has this pull of like offering a web like that with others, the web that's made of like lived experience and feelings and like deeply ingrained kind of, yeah, like emotional felt sense models of the world. And I think if we just have a sense of what draws us towards one thing and the other, we can like remain, I don't know, kind of, I guess like critical sounds a bit harsh, like it sounds a bit intense, but like we can at least remain curious as to what it is that drives us in one direction and another, and what we're actually yearning for when we kind of like where we place ourselves on that spectrum in various ways. And again, as you pointed out earlier, there's a lot of different like polarities that you could have, like you could think of that spectrum on. And I just think that's quite a valuable exercise to carry out in order to know that you're motivated by things that you actually subscribe to and that you're not just accepting the lowest common denominator of the kinds of attractors that you're drawn to just because they're part of the package or something like that.
Yeah. That's slightly. In addition, when you're aware of what draws you to these kind of things, you can create new versions of this that bring in the knowledge and the advancements, and like maybe draw inspiration from the tradition, but like allow you to go beyond and like be in tune with the deep needs that come from it.
So this has been a great conversation, everyone. We should probably wrap up soon. Are there any last thoughts that we want to wrap this with? It kind of went in an unexpected direction, talking about, you know, religion. Does anybody want to try and wrap this thing up with a nice bow? Blue,
I bet Nate could do it.
Pink bow, whatever bow color you want.
All I do is I have a bad habit at the very end of unpacking an even bigger question, so I might not be the best.
Oh yeah, you actually are the worst at this. Maybe Josh can do it.
I gotta move here. I'm gonna move here.
Oh nice. Okay, Jeremy, go.
Oh good. I just let me try it and then.
All right.
Definitely be prepared to save me. I would like to posit that this question is of tradition is actually, you know, a perfectly good placeholder for the entire topic of Doomer optimism. Like, it, as is tradition, it's an excellent metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the main thing, and this is good because this is basically what we try to do and model, and hopefully you all join us as listeners and maybe as potential future guests, and
maybe even hosts.
Maybe we're even all, then
always,
turn
into the
listener to guest to host pipeline. You know, it's. I just think it's infinitely necessary to model these things, and I would say, Ben left, but like his little speech was great. I mean, it's fundamentally we're driven forward in navigating these things. Like sense making is qualitative, it's intuitive, it's your gut, it's morality, and having like a moral grappling with the doom that we face and coming out on the other side and finding points of optimism is really the whole point. So I appreciate you all for coming.
Josh, did you have a final thought as well? I thought I saw you turn on your mic.
I was going to take a stab at a wrap statement. My feeling that, you know, we don't have to have it all figured out. The sense-making thing, I mean, it's a fun exercise and it's informative, and I don't want to discourage that, but we don't have to have all this stuff figured out. There's plenty of stuff to do. You know, there's plenty of stuff that we know is broken and we know we need to work on. We can get started right now. We have the knowledge, we have the tools, and, you know, it's all failing, but the good news is failure fixes itself.
Perfect. Brilliant. Perfect. Yeah. We're going to ask the organizers if it's okay for us to put this on our Doomer Optimism channel, the audio and the video, if everyone else is okay with that.
Is anybody not okay with that?
Okay.
We have like 100 listeners. No, we have like, we're not a big podcast.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not like we're not Joe Rogan. But yeah, so this was really wonderful. Thanks for our panelists for coming. Thanks for all the wonderful contributions. This was really nice. So we'll Pay attention to at Doomer Optimism on Twitter. That's where we'll post it when it's ready. But thanks all of you for coming.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you all.
Thanks, Arts.